Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Follow me on Twitter at AlMartinWKR, like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports, or even email me at AlMartin@WKAR.org. Hit us up, ladies and gents. We want to hear what's on your mind. Be a part of the hands-on discussion each and every day. Well, happy Monday, as I said earlier. Hope you guys had a great weekend. A lot of the good things going on in the state of Michigan this weekend with the whole jazz festival and things downtown Detroit. It was certainly a fun weekend, but now it's back to business. So on today's show, we invite a guest who knows quite a bit about the game of baseball when it comes to the international presence that the game has. Now, he's a writer in residence at Johns Hopkins University and has written 10 books, including novels and narrative nonfiction. His previous book, Summer of 68, was a Publisher's Weekly Top 10 Sports title and named a Michigan Notable Book. He's also written books like High Heat, which talks about a search for the fastest pitcher of all time, which turned out to be an editor's choice by the New York Times. Now, he also serves as an exhibit advisor to the National Baseball Hall of Fame and has appeared on CNN, ESPN, Sirius XM Radio. I mean, I could go on and on. Tim Wendell, welcome to Current Sports.
Great to be with you, Al. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, but how you doing?
I'm doing great. Sounds like we're having the same weather. Hot. I'm down here outside of Washington. It's not too great, but anyway.
I can just imagine. You got to stay cool, man. Crank up the AC. But all right. So, Tim, when you look at all your books of the past, like High Heat and Summer of 68, and now the newly released Habana Libre. Am I saying that right, Habana Libre?
You are saying it correct.
Just making sure.
Muy bien.
All right. Now, that's look at all these books, Tim. There's an obvious connection to the love of baseball that you have. Now, where did this love for the game come for you?
Oh, I think I've been a fan since a young age. Anybody who saw the movie The Natural, the last scene is at a place they filmed it. Unfortunately, it's not there anymore, in Buffalo. I grew up outside of Buffalo, and that's the old rock pile. So Robert Redford takes that guy deep is where I saw my first games, and actually saw some games way back when I was a kid at old Tiger Stadium. Had relatives up north, up in the Traverse City area, and we'd often hit a game on the way there. So
right.
I've always loved baseball, in part because of the game, but also because it can take you so many places, both historically and also, you know, kind of current events. And that's kind of one of the things that's happening with the new book, Habana Libre. I've been to Cuba 3 times. Wow. When I was finishing up Summer of 68 about the Tigers and the Cardinals and that great World Series, I was going, boy, what are you going to do next? And I found myself thinking about those trips to Cuba again and, you know, writing something about that island and their passion for baseball also.
Now, you talk about all those memories, Tim. I mean, you've had countless memories when it concerns to the game of baseball. Which one sticks out the most to you? I know it's hard to choose.
It's hard to choose, but in some ways, and I don't know, this may allow me to plug the new book a little bit, Habana Libre, but
right.
I, you know, when I went to Cuba my first time in 1992, Al, I thought I knew everything about the game. I just covered my first couple World Series for Baseball Weekly. I was one of the founders of that publication. I thought I knew it all.
Man.
And I went to Havana, and nothing prepared me for, number one, how passionate the fans were, but how good some of the players were. That infield the national team out of Cuba back then, was stellar. And I think the guy playing third base, a guy named Omar Linares, is still potentially the best third baseman I have ever seen. He was like
Man.
A cross between Brooks Robinson and Mike Schmidt, could hit for power, could field. And so in starting up this book again, nobody knows Omar Linares because he never defected. He wasn't like the Hernandez brothers or even some of the guys coming out now that are making news, like Puig with L.A. and Hespedes
right.
with Oakland. Nobody knew about him, and that kind of became the starting point for this new project. What if he had thought more serious about coming out? What would have been the ramifications? And there's a character in Habana Libre called Omar Silva, you know, not much of a leap there, but is based in very broad strokes on the great Omar Linares.
Now, talking more about this book, Tim, Habana Libre, now you talk about, as you just said, the connection between Cuba and the United States when it comes to the game. How does your book highlight that connection?
Well, it's pretty much, I've always been amazed, El, the nations are so close, and yet, in a lot of ways, they're connected, and yet they're separate. One of the things that blew me away, they have a place down there they call Skinny Caliente, which means the hot corner in Spanish, and it's pretty much part of their central park. It's a corner of the park. You can go there any day of the week, and there'll be hundreds of people debating baseball. I bet you they're debating right now the Tigers' lack of a closer.
Right. Very, very hot topic.
Very hot topic everywhere, even in Havana.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I find amazing is there's a connection, and a lot of them know baseball, at least statistically, and who's up with what roster better than I do at any given point. But what's the disconnect, what blows me away, is I often, when I go to Havana and go to Skinny Caliente, I will bring copies of, oh, I don't know, newspapers, Sports Illustrated, whatever I can get a hold of. And invariably, when I've handed those out to people, they will, like, look at them, you know, say back in the old days, and go, is that what Cal Ripken really looks like? Is that what Ken Griffey Jr. really looks like? They know so much about him, yet they never see the games and they never see the images. It's so, so bizarre.
Unbelievable. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Tim Wendell. He is an acclaimed author, author of 10 books. His latest book entitled Habana Libre, and that's very interesting. So Skinny Caliente, that's what you call it, right? And that means what again?
It means the hot corner.
The hot corner.
And it's a place, again, they have these impassioned debates about baseball every day of the week, and it's mostly men, but there are women there, and they'll be debating, oh, they shouldn't have started so-and-so in last night's game or whatever, and they're mostly just hearing it on the radio, or box scores are getting kind of still are on the black market in Cuba. You know, a box score is a big deal in Havana.
Wow, so they don't even see the game, but they're debating it like just going off what they hear on the radio and things they read. That's unbelievable, man. That sounds like the barbershop. We have a segment here called Barbershop Wednesday, and we just debate about, you know how you go in a barbershop and everybody's debating tons of topics. That's what Skinny Caliente is like. That's really cool, Tim.
It's very much so. I think all they need is a barber down there, and away they go.
Exactly. So, Tim, I mean, you've been around the game for years and years. In what particular ways has the game evolved over your time, and has it changed for the better?
I think it is changing for the better. It's taking some time. I think it's funny. I can remember being with Ken Burns when he was finishing up the edits for his PBS series on baseball. Mm-hmm. And we were like hanging out after work. He's up in New Hampshire, you know, one night. And we were just looking at, in a sense, outtakes, things that did not make the final cut. And we were watching this old footage, I believe a game in the 50s between the Giants and the Yankees at the old Polo Grounds in New York. Mm. And it was fast. I mean, guys are going first to third, and they were throwing inside, and it was very, you know, it was aggressive. It was macho. People were fast on the base paths.
Right.
And Ken at one point said, it's too bad you don't see that as much in the major, you know, in baseball today. And I kind of smiled and said, Ken, you can still see it. You have to go to, like, Havana, Caracas, you know, Venezuela, Panama, because that's, in a sense, kind of what the Latinos have seized upon with baseball. And I think with the rise of Latinos within the major leagues, they're kind of bringing that old style. In a sense, they're bringing our game back to us. And I think that's a really cool thing. The exhibit I helped the Hall of Fame with up in Cooperstown, at one point we decided just to kind of have footage, boom, 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 real quick, of all these kind of great plays. And invariably a lot of them were Latino stars, you know, making barehanded throw to first base or some diving catch or something like that.
Right.
So this passion, this aggression for the game, I think, is what is coming back to our national pastime.
Very true. Now, Tim, you just hit on it. When you look at the growing popularity of the game of baseball when it comes to the Latino population, I mean, it's mind-blowing. I mean, look at the Detroit Tigers right now. They have about 10 players from places like Venezuela, Cuba, the DR, the Dominican Republic. I mean, when did this trend for, you know, as far as popularity in the Latino culture, when did that start?
It started actually longer ago than people think. They've been playing baseball in Cuba almost as long as they've been playing it in this country. It's close to 100 years. But it's a little bit different. It's viewed differently on a couple different levels. Number one, at least in Cuba, it was always the game of an independent nation. You know, if you were kind of a radical who wanted to break away from Spain back in the day, you played baseball. You didn't go to bullfights or play polo or do these other things.
Right.
You played baseball. It's like this radical game. And I think the other thing that's really kind of allowed it to take off in the Caribbean is it's a game that's still in a lot of these nations, Cuba, the DR, certainly now Venezuela has taken off. It's a game that's handed down generation to generation, a little bit like it used to be in this country. And as I've been told in my travels a lot around the Caribbean, I've been reminded of, teaching a kid baseball is difficult. You know, you need an adult there. You need somebody to kind of guide them through because it's, number one, it's a tough game to learn, and it's a game you don't learn by yourself. It's not like you're going to take a basketball, go down and shoot hoops.
Right, exactly.
And so I think that type of, you know, organization or mechanism still exists in a lot of these maybe even poorer parts of the Caribbean, and that's one reason that a lot of these towns like, you know, San Pedro de Macorís and the Dominican Republic is like the place of shortstops. That's what they love, in large part because the whole community and a lot of families have embraced that.
Wow. Now, so do you see the numbers growing for the Latino culture when it comes to baseball, or has it reached its peak?
I think maybe it's come close to reaching its peak at a major league level, and I say that in part for two reasons. Mm-hmm. I think baseball is starting to come back thanks to the efforts of Major League Baseball in the inner cities. It's still got a long way to go in the U.S. inner cities, but it's at least starting to come back in terms of fields. The other thing is that for a long time, Cuba, and then when Cuba got shut down, you know, it kind of rippled through the Caribbean to places like the DR and Venezuela. That spread baseball around there. But now you're starting to see baseball take off in other places. I mean, you look at the recent World Baseball Classic, the success of the Italians, you know, how well even Team Holland did and such. And there's a friend of mine, he's a top scout, and he signed a number of guys over the years. I mean, he had a hand in A-Rod signing way back with the Mariners. I mean, even before then, Daryl Strawberry. And I was talking to him a while back, and I said, "Where you been?" Because he always tends to be a half step ahead of everybody. He said, well, of course I was in the Dominican Republic at our academy. Everybody's got an academy. I had to see some guys. And then after that, he said, though, I went after that Australia, China, Italy, Holland, Croatia, and at least in all those countries except China, because they're still coming on, he signed what he felt were quality prospects from all those countries. And it's funny, outside of our borders, I mean, inside the U.S., baseball is kind of perceived as stodgy, almost old-fashioned at times, maybe a little bit slow.
Right.
But I'll tell you, the rest of the world really embraces it. And some countries, and I've been told this, they view it as radical as the X Games or something like that.
Really? Baseball?
Baseball.
We're talking about the game of baseball. They view it as radical as the X Games. Where that's unbelievable.
And it's taking off in like all these places. I mean, like Australia, for example, Australia 10, 12 years ago, well, I don't know, nobody quite knew a bat from a cricket bat probably or something. But now you're getting, you know, quality prospects, and I think that's going to even increase in parts of Europe. And if China ever opens up, look out. So if anything, that will maybe keep the numbers down of Latinos at the major league, simply because I think there's going to be much more competition worldwide.
Ladies and gents, we're talking with Tim Wendell. He is the author of 10 books. His latest one is really, I'm looking forward to reading this, man, Habana Libre. And you talk about the connection with Cuba in relation to the United States. Now, I got to ask you this, from an international perspective, Tim, when you look at the game of baseball and you see the PED, performance-enhancing drug epidemic that's played the game for over years, and now this most recent one that can really, it really looks to be huge. I mean, dozens of MLB players could be involved in this. I mean, what is that perception like in other countries when they hear about these whole PED scandals going on in Major League Baseball?
Well, I think the perception often, Al, is, and I think sometimes we mischaracterize it, is we don't really understand maybe how desperate some players in some of these countries are to get to the major leagues. And so, therefore, it's been so bizarre the last couple seasons. We've had a very good, I think, drug policy at the minor league level in the U.S. I think at some point we have to take that. That's been very effective, and it's starting to happen, but really make it almost the same thing that you would have, say, in the academy system in the Dominican Republic, the growing kind of academies and scout situation that you have in Venezuela, and make it uniform. It's so funny because the first time I ever went to an academy in the Dominican Republic, which is not a very rich country, I came around the corner in this jungle, and I thought they had dropped a Holiday Inn Express, like, in the middle of this thing. I was, like, dumbfounded
wow.
by how quality the buildings were and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I even kind of got on somebody about it. I said, boy, this seems a little over the top. Look how, you know, much better these buildings are than what's down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said, you don't get it. We're trying to get these guys ready so when the fortunate ones are signed and they end up in Modesto or Great Falls or, you know, a Grand Rapids or whatever, it's seamless. They're able to just kind of get in and concentrate on their craft. They know enough English to get by. They know how to order in a restaurant. They know what it's like at a top line hotel. And
right.
I think what we need to do is take the drug policy and make that the same too. So the same kind of drug policy that they're, you know, as soon as they belong to an academy or get signed to an academy, it's just the same one that would be they would expect at the minor league level. And I think that would go a long, long way.
So when you look at the drug policy for the minor league level and compare it to that of the major league level, what is the major league drug policy lacking?
I think it's lacking is frequent testing and, frankly, in a sense, consequence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're going to see more consequence depending what shakes out with this latest round. I don't know if it's going to stick because of the players' union and such, but, you know, we're hearing talk of anybody who's been caught up in this situation down in Florida, it's going to be a 100-game suspension. Maybe
right.
that's the first time. And that's a little bit more what it's like, certainly at the academy level or even the minor league level, is you don't want to be caught, you know, the first time. You know, and I think that's one of the things at a major league level. It's like, oh, okay, I got caught. Well, I got a 50-game. Who cares? And, you know, there's not enough repercussions, I think, at first to make people pause. And I think that allows them to think they can just keep beating the system or trying to beat the system. I think what we're seeing in Florida is the latest example of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we're really going to – Major League Baseball will never – kind of put this problem in the back corner unless they get as serious as the International Olympic Committee and organizations like that, where, you know, gosh, you know, you test positive. I mean, look what happens to Ben Johnson. Look what happened to some of our sprinters in the last couple of years. I mean, you
right.
aren't around for a while. And
right.
and I think that's what would make people stop.
I really hope it gets to that because it's really getting ridiculous and has been. Just seems like it's growing each and every year, or, you know, just things come up out of nowhere where you just hear about players who have used it in the past and it's now just hitting the fan. I mean, I really hope they do something about it, Tim. But all right, now, so Tim, since the mid-1990s, you have made 3 trips to Cuba, as you just highlighted earlier, including the landmark series between Team Cuba and the Orioles. I mean, how incredible was that?
Oh, it's a lot of fun, and that's kind of the backdrop for this new book, Habana Libre. And
mm-hmm.
I'm a little surprised that we haven't had more. The Cuban national team is coming again to this country, but they'll be playing college teams, and that'll be happening next month. I'm kind of waiting for when another major league team or two wants to go back down to Cuba, because
right.
the real historians in baseball know this connection between the two countries. I mean, Jackie Robinson, before he breaks the color barrier, that's where the Brooklyn Dodgers trained. I mean, you know, they have great stories down there about all these guys from Babe Ruth on down to Bob Feller barnstorming the island. I mean, they just love the game. And I think it's just waiting to happen. Some of it's political. Some of it's maybe economic, but I'll never forget flying out from that game in Havana, and I was on the MLB charter, and I just happened to be sitting next to Stan Kasten.
Mm-hmm.
And Stan Kasten, you know, at one point was running He was top guy with the Atlanta Braves, the hockey team, Atlanta Thrashers, and Atlanta Hawks. And I remembered Kasten was the first guy to take an NBA, a basketball team, to the old Soviet Union. He took Dominic Wilkins and the Hawks over there and really kind of opened up that part of the world for basketball, you know, professional basketball and following it. And the plane's kind of taking off. And, Al, from Havana to Miami is not a very long flight. You may get to 20,000 feet. And we're kind of going up, and we're starting to come down. And I looked over at Stan, and I went, Stan, like a minor league team back in Havana, maybe someday a major league team, what do you think? And he just kind of smiled and said, piece of cake. And here you have the guy who opened up the Soviet Union, which had to be really tough. And he's just going, day's going to come.
Day's going to come.
So close.
That's a really cool story, man. So, I mean, when you went over there to Cuba, Tim, how did that change your overall perception and the way you look at baseball?
It really made me realize it's an international game and that it's not, even though it's our national pastime, it's not necessarily our domain. And the other thing that was underscored, and it's something I've become even more convinced of as the years have gone by, you know, we tend to look at our major leagues as, okay, we're rooting for the Tigers or we're rooting whoever, and that's our team. You don't realize how these teams are put on such a pedestal outside our borders. You know, I remember talking with a guy who actually ended up, he ended up defecting. He never really made it in the majors, and it probably discombobulated his whole life, kind of Andy Morales. But, you know, at one point I was going, why? Why do you leave your home and, you know, defect and go through all the things you need to do to try to get here and play in the major leagues? And he said, what you have to realize, Tim, is the major leagues are the best. And if you do anything with serious intent in your life, you want to see at some point how you compare against the best. And that's the major leagues outside our borders. It's not a team, and it's not, you know, teams in the AL Central or whatever, you know, fans, players outside our borders look upon the major leagues is the best. That's where you play against the best.
And, the top of the top, right.
And that was really underscored once I went away.
Ladies and gents, we're talking with Tim Wendell, author of 10 books. His latest one, Habana Libre. Tim, when individuals get this book and pick it up and read it, what do you want them to take away?
Just how close Cuba and the U.S. are, and unfortunately how far, because of politics, we're still away. And I hope this changes in the foreseeable future. I mean, on that first trip to Cuba in 92, I was thinking about this the other day, because I'm working on a new book about the 91 series and such.
Nice.
And after that series, that's the first trip to Cuba. And I remember that very first game I was in Cuba. And I was on they didn't really have a press box, Al, and I'm sitting on the edge of the row, and this guy came down and started talking to me, and he said, I hear you're American, yes. And he said, tell me about the Minnesota Twins. And, of course, the Twins won in 91.
Yeah.
And I started doing kind of more of my radio shtick a little bit. Well, it's going to be tough for them to repeat. They're going to lose guys. They don't have a lot of money. And he kind of stopped me and said, I know all that. And I said, okay, what do you need to know then? And he said, what do they look like? And I went around the diamond with some help from some other people describing, you know, Kent Herbeck at first and Chuck Knobloch at second and finishing with Kirby Puckett in center field. And as I was doing so, I wasn't really looking at them. I was struggling. My Spanish is up and down at times.
Right.
And then I looked back at them and I just said, there you go. That's how your 1991 World Championship Minnesota Twins look like. And he had tears running down his face. And he said, thank you. Now I know. And at that point, I went, "Wow, we're in a whole different element here, and enthusiasm and passion for the game."
I see that, man. That's unbelievable, man. It really opens your eyes to, you know, the impact that baseball doesn't just have in the States, but I mean, not a lot of people know how popular and how much people love it in other parts of the world. That's really cool, Tim. So, all in all, how can people pick up Habana Libre?
Oh, it's easy. Amazon is, and frankly, we've got a special on right now with Kindle and Nook for $3.99. You can't beat that.
I'm not
gonna make any money off that. How am I gonna do this?
I'm sure you'll get a bunch of people buying it for $3.99. All right, it'll stack up. All right, it'll stack up for you.
and people that liked Summer of '68. I mean, I was just up there in your guys' neck of the woods for you know, that banquet, and you know, that being honored as one of Michigan's notable books. I mean, hopefully they'll enjoy this too.
Definitely. Well, there you have it. Acclaimed author who also serves as an exhibit advisor to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. He has written 10 books, his latest one called Habana Libre, and talks about the interesting connection between Cuba and American baseball. Tim Wendell, thanks for being a part of Current Sports today.
Hey, my pleasure, Al.
Thanks a lot. All right, guys. Well, when we return to Current Sports, we'll dive into our Current Sports section of the show. I want to remind you all that we'll be taking your calls at 1:40. Look, we got some Latino music playing. We're in the mood right now, yes. We'll be taking your calls at 140 517 355 9527. Let us hear your thoughts on any of today's topics. We want to hear what's on your mind. Stay tuned. More Current Sports is next.
Talk of the Nation provides you with the day's news and more, the experiences and opinions of people around the country and around the world. I'm Neil Conan. When you're looking for the latest news and how it affects you, your family, your neighbors, and your life, turn to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 2 p.m.
7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat.
To be able to start a farmer's market takes time and energy, people power, and planning.
We change the notes, or we change the phrasing, or we change something for what might happen, and you can't really predict, and that's the beauty of jazz.
We are reinventing city government as we go along. It's like redesigning the airplane while in flight.
Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 WKAR.
Hey, good people, welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. It's now time for Current Sports, giving you all of the sporting news concerning the good people of Mid-Michigan. I want to remind you all, calls at 140-517-355-9527. 1:40 p.m., we'll be taking your calls at 517-355-9527. You want to hear what's on your mind? Let's dive right into the topics. A lot going on this weekend. The Detroit Tigers. They win a four-game series against the Boston Red Sox, 3-1. The only loss for the Tigers came on Friday. The Tigers beat the Sox yesterday 7-5. Justin Verlander. What is up with Justin Verlander, guys? He is really struggling. This is not the JV that we know in the past. He has allowed four runs. He allowed four runs and seven hits yesterday in five innings. He walked three, struck out four. His ERA bumped up to 3.9. I mean, goodness gracious, this is not the JV we all know and love. But it was the second straight start in which he lasted only five innings. And Detroit actually led 2-0 after the first inning, but Verlander gave up two runs in the second. Just like that, game was tied. So Detroit's bullpen has also been just inconsistent and not great. But Drew Smyly, he pitched 2 2/3 scoreless innings. That's before Benoit came in. But JV, that's really the thing that really sticks out to me looking at that game, because Justin Verlander, of course, I mean, many would argue that he is the best pitcher in the game. But so far this season, he's really not shown it. And yesterday, he just looked off. And he has all year, to be honest with you. So if you look at this whole weekend series, though, against the Sox, again, the Tigers win the four-game series, 3-1. Next to Verlander struggling, will probably eclipse in Verlander struggle, is Max Scherzer. He became the first pitcher to start 11-0 since Roger Clemens in 1997. Man, now the last 12-0 was also Clemens during a 14-0 stretch to begin his AL MVP season. That's back in 1986. Yes, I mean, and Max is on pace right now. Again, Clemens went 14-0. If it continues for Scherzer, I could see him. And the thing about this is Scherzer has been getting unbelievable run support. I mean, he's receiving 7.84 runs of support per nine innings. That's the most in baseball. So anytime Scherzer steps to the mound, he's also getting help from some hot bats from the Tigers. So, I mean, he's been unbelievable. Unbelievable. Check him out right here. Here's Scherzer talking about, you know, just this incredible ride he's on right now.
It's nice to start the season 11-0. It just means we're playing great team baseball, and I'm going out there and doing my job. You know, I'm credited with a ton of run support, and, you know, that's when you got to give all the credit to teammates. And every time I feel like I go deep into the game, they're going to pick me up, and they have the whole entire season.
Yes, he has been special. Now, he struck out six Red Sox on Saturday night, giving him at least six Ks in each of his first 15 starts this season. Now, that's the fourth longest per-game run of at least six Ks to start a season since 1900. Most of you guys listening weren't alive. Unbelievable. It's a pleasure, an honor, and a pleasure, and a privilege, all of that, to watch Max Scherzer take the mound and pitch. He is unbelievable. So 11-0, what's up with JV? But, I mean, Max Scherzer, I mean, if you look at this whole series, he was the story. So, again, Tigers won a four-game series against the Sox, 3-1. Only loss for the Tigers came on Friday. They now get today off and will be revving up for the Angels. All right, let's move on now. Guys, the Big Ten adds two bowls. That's right. They added the Holiday Bowl and the Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl to its future postseason lineup and will face Pac-12 teams in both games. That was told by to ESPN. Now, Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney will announce the moves during a conference call today with bowl officials and Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott. So the Big Ten has already added the Pinstripe Bowl in New York to its future postseason lineup. And the league is expected to continue agreements with the Capital One, Outback, Gator, Heart of Dallas Bowls, and also the Music City Bowl. So Big Ten adds the, mark it down, the Holiday Bowl and the Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl to its future postseason lineup. That will be playing Pac-12 teams in both games. So interesting stuff there. All right, the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. On Saturday, the Chicago Blackhawks, they topped the Boston Bruins 3-1 to take a 3-2 series lead with a chance to close out the series tonight. Now, this will be Chicago's second championship in 4 years. They really have a solid team over there. Of course, Chicago, I mean, they had one stretch at the beginning of the season that, I mean, they just kept winning and winning and winning. Unbelievable streak they had going. Patrick Kane was great for the Blackhawks, and Corey Crawford had 24 saves. Kane has scored 7 goals in the last 7 games. So he's been like that guy, the most consistent player so far throughout this series, to tell you the truth. Now, two of the top fours in the game of hockey were both injured that night, though, on Saturday night. Jonathan Toews and Patrice Bergeron are both hurt. Both of them hurt, guys. Toews has an upper body injury, missed the entire third period after a shot to the head from Bruins defenseman Johnny Boychuk. And not much is being said about Bergeron's injury, however. The team is just calling it a quote-unquote body injury. So both of them are game-time decisions for tonight. Now, if Chicago loses tonight, they will push the series to a decisive 7th game, which will be played on Wednesday. So interesting stuff there. So right now, Chicago has a chance to close it out, but two of the top fours in the game of hockey, Jonathan Toews has been great, and then Bergeron, both of them are hurt, though. Both of them. And some news that broke today, well, I should say last night. There's been talks about this all week, and we've just been waiting and waiting and waiting. Then the talks died down. Now they just focused on one aspect to it, and that aspect is just putting Coach Doc Rivers, taking him from the Celtics, and moving him to the Clips, where he will become their new head coach. Yes, the Boston Celtics have agreed to the deal that they confirmed Sunday, as I said, a 3-year deal, actually. 3-year, $20 million contract that will send Coach Doc Rivers from Boston over to the Los Angeles Clippers to coach. And they will also send a 2015 first-round pick as compensation to the Celtics, who have agreed to release the coach from the 3 years, $20 million he is remaining on his deal with the club. So, sources close to the process told ESPN that the Clippers believe that the deal with Rivers will clinch Chris Paul's signature on a new 5-year max contract. So this is definitely a move that looks to keep Chris Paul with the Clippers. And, you know, Doc Rivers is a little frustrated, though, because he feels as though the perception that he was the driving force behind this to go to the Clippers, and that he was unwilling to coach the Celtics if Pierce and Garnett were not going to be on the roster. And there's talks about Pierce or Garnett both moving, or just one moving. It's been talks of that now, and I'm sure I just don't really see Paul Pierce and KG, both of them, staying if they don't have Doc Rivers over there. But we'll see what happens. We'll see what transpires. But Doc is expected to be named head coach of the LA Clippers later on today. And, man, now if they didn't get Doc Rivers, the Clippers were prepared to either hire Brian Shaw or Byron Scott on Monday if the deal didn't go through. But the deal looks to go through, and Doc Rivers looks to be your new coach over in LA. All right, Dwayne Wade, Miami Heat's guard, he just released a fitness app called, quote, Dwayne Wade Driven. He just released it today, the same day that, of course, Miami is having their parade, winning its third NBA championship. They're going nuts down there right now. But Dwayne Wade just releases this fitness app. He says, quote, it shows people ways to work out, a lot of different ways to work out, whether it's basketball drills or not. A lot of people work out at home. A lot of people don't have access to a gym. A lot of people don't have trainers. So it's kind of like I'm the personal trainer for basketball and fitness, and I'll show them a lot of things that I do with my body and for my body. Now, I was going to download this app once I heard about it. I'm like, that's pretty cool. Dwayne Wade has a fitness app. I need to get in shape myself. I need to start eating right and healthier. But the app is $3.99. I'm not paying money for that. But if you want to go, if you're a huge Dwayne Wade fan and trying to get fit, the app is priced at $3.99. Just download it for your smartphone. It's called Dwayne Wade Driven. Now, it includes basketball drills, a fitness routine, along with ways for users to track their process. Driven Apps is the publisher. They plan to release an additional bundles for users to download once they have mastered and completed the whole Dwayne Wade Driven program. So, interesting stuff. So, if you got $3.99 that you're willing to spend a month, go out and get Dwayne Wade Driven and get healthy. Interesting stuff. All right, Serena Williams and Maria Sharapova. Yes, have you guys heard about the beef? Well, now, earlier in the week, last week that is, Serena had issued a statement expressing regret for remarks about, if you guys remember, the 16-year-old victim, the rape victim in the Steubenville case. Now, on Sunday, she said that she and the family came to a wonderful understanding and were in constant contact with each other. So that looks to be, you know, all fine and dandy. But in that Rolling Stone article, I mean, there was a lot said, or she was misquoted, you know, during a lot throughout the article, to tell you the truth. But on Sunday, Williams explained that some words that she said about Maria Sharapova, and she apologized to Maria, actually, about the comments. Now, she said, quote, this is to about Sharapova. Serena says, quote, she begins every interview with, I'm so happy, I'm so lucky. It's so boring. She's not going to be invited to the cool parties. And, hey, if she wants to be the guy with the black heart, go for it, end quote. So, apparently, Maria Sharapova, of course, read the quote, was not too happy about it, and decided to fire back at Serena Williams, saying, quote, if she wants to talk about something personal, maybe she should talk about her relationship and her boyfriend that was married and is getting a divorce and has kids, end quote. So they're kind of going back and forth with this. Again, Serena tried to apologize to her. She approached Sharapova, tried to smooth things over. And this was at like a pre-tournament party that happened last week Thursday. So, but yes, again, I mean, you can read all of this in the Rolling Stone article. Serena is saying she was misquoted, but it's already out there now, and it's getting a lot of heat. And man, I just tell you, man, sometimes you just got to just learn to just shut up, man, and just just shut up and do what you do. That's what I always say, man. But interesting feud. So Maria Sharapova, it'll be interesting to see what they do. Wimbledon is going on, of course. We'll talk about more of that coming up on Pick'em Mondays, actually, in a few minutes. And Messi, Yes, he has paid his taxes. Lionel Messi, arguably the greatest soccer player of all time. But, of course, as Current Sports told you a few weeks ago, he is under investigation in Spain for tax fraud allegations. Now, he has paid $10 million to the Spanish tax authorities to correct tax returns for 2010 and 2011. Of course, Messi and his father, Jorge Messi, they were summoned on to a September 17th court date complaint alleging that the two were involved in a fraud tax type of scandal here. So they're saying that they weren't paying their taxes. So September 17th is the court date, and Messi has paid money to try to correct things, his tax returns, during that time. Now, Messi said that he has denied the wrongdoing and has received public backing from Barcelona club president Sandro Rosell and former president Juan Laporta, who was in charge during the years of the alleged fraud. So this will be interesting how this turns out. Also want to note, ladies and gents, that Adrian Broner, the up-and-coming boxing star, he became a three-weight world champion on Saturday night, beating Paulie Maglagini. They went 12 rounds, and Broner won by decision. It's really fun watching Adrian Broner. He's the up-and-coming guy. The guy is quick. He's got a lot of speed. So he wins. He is now a three-weight world champion, defeating Paul Maglagini. 12 rounds, Broner won by decision. Of course, Paulie, he was not too happy with the decision, saying he got robbed. But, hey, I mean, you're always going to get a play from the loser when it goes to decision. That's just how boxing is nowadays. But congrats to Adrian. Look forward to looking at that kid more often when he starts to really, really start to build that boxing rep. All right, ladies and gents, well, we have to move on to our last segment of Current Sports. We're going to take your calls about any of the topics discussed today, 517-355-9527. Hit me up on Facebook.com/CurrentSports. Tweet me a question at Al Martin WKR. Want to hear from you. Stick around. I'm going to bring in my production assistants, Alex Sharg and Matt Lufkin. We got lots to update you guys on. I think Alex wants to argue about LeBron and Jordan. I'm calling them out. He wants to do it today. Let's get it on. More Current Sports is next, guys.
On the next Fresh Air, Questlove, the drummer with the hip-hop band The Roots, the house band for Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. They're about to move, along with Fallon, to The Tonight Show. Questlove has a new memoir about his life and obsessions, including Soul Train.
I could sit and watch all 1,100 episodes of just the intros of Soul Train.
Join us.
That's Fresh Air, coming up at 3 o'clock.
You count on All Things Considered for many reasons. The biggest stories of the day, from around the world to your own backyard. The thoughtful commentaries, the insightful features, or all of the above. All Things Considered has been your trusted source for news every afternoon. I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered, and glad to be a part of this show. I'll see you at 4 this afternoon.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We'll be taking your calls right now to discuss anything that's on your noggin, 517-355-9527. Give us a buzz. And ladies and gents, we're going to get into Pick'em Mondays in just a sec, but I'm told we have a caller on line one. Ray, how you doing?
Big Al.
What's up, man?
Hey, you are. Hey, let's talk about college football here coming up.
Gotcha.
I'm hoping Michigan ends up in the cellar there. I don't care much for them after they fired me.
Okay.
What do they have? Who they got ranked to win that division over there?
Well, I'm also joined by our production assistants Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky to weigh in on this as well. Guys, you know what the preseason rankings are right now?
Well, I believe for the Legends division, it's kind of a toss-up between Nebraska and Michigan.
Yeah,
those are the two front runners.
Nebraska is up there. And for trying to think,
what about State? How many players you got coming back?
Enough to be competitive. Enough. A lot on defense, and you know, the guys on offense. You know, last year maybe we don't want as many back, but they're back, got another year of experience, but they're the dark horses now. That's what happens when you lose six games in a season.
Right, and Ray, when it comes down to it, I keep harping on this, we still got some time for college football to start, but receivers got to catch the ball. I think Andrew Maxwell will mature more, and I think he'll fit into the quarterback role nicely and be more calm and willing to take more risks down the field. But at the end of the day, they got to catch balls. So, and that defense, of course, I mean, you got Narduzzi at the helm. That's going to be solid as always, man. So I'm not too worried about State.
Well, the year after that, don't they go – Michigan has to go in the same conference as Ohio State or somebody, some other tough teams?
Yeah, believe so, yeah.
What's that going to be division a year later? Do you know what the breakup is on that?
Well, it's East and West. So I know that, like, Penn State Maryland and Rutgers, Ohio State, Michigan State, and somebody else is going to be in that Eastern Division,
yeah.
And that's going to, and I believe it's Indiana, the Hoosiers. Unfortunately for Indiana, even though they look like they might be getting better slowly but surely, but
yeah.
That's that loaded Eastern Division, and then the West is pretty much everybody else.
And Ray, towards July and August, we'll probably have a better picture on what those divisions will be like in predictions.
Definitely. Still a little early, Ray.
Yeah, it is. But months will get here quicker than you think.
Oh, without a doubt. Time flies, man.
Yeah, it really does. what do you think of the Lions in the NFL?
Oh, man, that's still away, too. As far as the Lions go, I think they'll be solid next year. I think Stafford, you know, is going to fit into his role nicely. But still, it's still early, guys. It's still early.
It's very early, Ray, but...
Well, I got to do some research.
You know, teams emerge, and then they kind of fade back, which is what you saw with the Lions. You know, they had that breakout year 2 years ago. Everybody knew how to prepare for them last year, and they struggled. This year, hopefully, it'll be somewhere in the middle. They'll bounce back and start trending up.
Yeah. Well, hey, thanks a lot, Ray, for the call, man. Appreciate it. All right, let's move on. Well, guys, it's Monday. Monday. So, you know, every Monday... It's Pick 'em Monday. So
it's time for you to rub it in my face, Al.
Yeah.
Rub it in my face.
Yep.
And Matt here.
And, well, Matt, right. Well, first of all, let's give a rundown of what the stats look like, the standings look like right now.
Right. And Aaron's clapping there. He's pretty happy about this.
He's
but,
very
happy from
about
last
this.
Week, Matt called NASCAR and got 5 points.
He called NASCAR.
He picked the winner.
He picked the winner of NAT. No one picks the winner of NASCAR, and Matt called NASCAR the NASCAR winner. Can you believe that?
I believe when I said Martin Truex Jr., I followed it up with remember the name, and
yes.
Sure enough, his first win in 6 years, I believe.
That's unbelievable.
218 races.
Are you
so.
Working for Vegas or something?
Did Jesus come to you in a dream and
well,
say, pick
you know,
this guy?
I did have a weird you know, experience the night before with a crazy dream sequence, and then there you go. It came to me in the desert. It said, Martin Truex Jr. will win at Sonoma, and sure enough,
oh my
you
God.
Know, he rides his top three finish at Michigan.
No one picks NASCAR. I'm steaming, but he is really... kicking our butts right now.
For now. Anyway, 13 he got last week. You ended up with 10, Al. I ended up with 9, and Mike ended up with 7, which puts the overall standings. Matt leading the pack, 44 points.
Mm.
Al and Mike are now tied at 30.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I'm trailing. Looks like karaoke it is.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
20 points.
So, ladies and gents, if you don't know, the loser of the standings each month, at the first of the month, the loser has to sing a song, karaoke style, and the song will be chosen by the winner of that month. So, Alex may be headed down that road to sing like some Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You or something. I don't know. Matt's got some clever stuff up his
It's going to be embarrassing.
It's going to be very embarrassing, and I cannot wait for it. But, man, so the only one close to Matt right now is me and Mike, and we have 30.
Believe it or not,
14 down.
I am closer to you and Mike than you are to Matt.
Oh, of course. No one's close to Matt. It's oh my, that's frustrating, man. All right, what do
well,
we got this week?
Yeah, let's
man?
Run down the picks this week. So from last week, we're still waiting on the Stanley Cup final series. It's game 6 tonight. So without further ado, we've got to call game 6 tonight. Do you guys have Chicago winning the series, or is it going to be Boston extending it?
Well, I believe, didn't Matt already choose Boston winning in 7?
I think so.
I did.
I think he did. And I think Chicago closes it out tonight. I think they close it out, bury it. Lord Stanley is theirs tonight.
Matt?
You know, I really want to take Boston, but maybe for – well, I get, you know what? I'm up by a lot of points. Even if I don't win, I'm not going to get last. I'm going to stick with Boston tonight. Let's go Boston in game six.
All right. I've got to catch up. I'm going to go with Boston as well.
You're going to Boston as well.
Going with Boston as well.
Gotcha.
Let's go Tigers and Angels. Mm-hmm. Three games. We've got C.J. Wilson and Porcello, Tommy Hansen and Alvarez, and then the final game of the series is Weaver, once a Tiger, versus Doug Fister. Who do you guys got in this three-game series? Do you like the Tigers maybe 2-1? Are you going to sweep them?
I'm going
– Angels are a good
I'm
team.
I'm taking a risk. No, I'm not saying Tigers sweep. Nope. Tigers win 2-1.
I'm taking Angels take two of them 2-1.
I'm going to go Angels 2-1 as well.
Gotcha.
All right. Now we've got Tigers and Tampa. Pitchers are still yet to be announced, but Scherzer is for sure at that first game.
Yep, you already know that. Tigers sweep.
Dang. I'm going to take Tigers 2-1.
All right, I'm going to go Tigers sweep too.
All right,
so now we've got – this is probably one that Matt is going to be very, very knowledgeable in because after NASCAR, this guy can pick anyone.
Right.
So we've got Wimbledon men and Wimbledon women.
Yeah.
Let's start with Wimbledon men.
You got?
I'm
you go first.
I'm certainly not taking Nadal because
he
just
lost.
No,
he's not good on grass. Man.
I'm going to go with Roger Federer in the men's side, and let's go crazy. Let's go Sharapova on the women's side.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's do it.
Nice.
All right, I'm going to go with Andy Murray and Serena.
Okay. I'm going to go with give me Serena, of course.
Of course.
And I'm going with Federer.
Federer. Ah, okay. Boxing middleweight, we saw what happened with Bronner winning that welterweight. Now we've got Golovkin versus Maclin. Golovkin defending himself against Maclin, a power puncher. Who do you guys got?
Maclin.
I'm going to go with Maclin, too.
Oh, man, I'm going to be boring and also go with Maclin.
All right. Now comes the time where we have to predict where Joe Dumars will land his pick this year. Hopefully it won't be a Darko pick, but...
It better not. No, it won't be a Darko pick.
Recently retired Darko Milicic.
Recently retired, yeah.
Exactly.
Retired, yeah.
With the ninth pick, guys, who are the Pistons going to draft? Are they going to reach, quote-unquote, on Muhammad? Are they going to go with a point guard like McCollum?
I'm going with Burke.
You're going with Burke? He's going to fall to the Pistons?
I think he'll fall. I think Burke will
fall.
Wow. I've been reading a lot.
Why do you think Burke will fall?
Just because I think no one really... As far as Burke goes... like I said, Burke's a solid point guard. He can take you inside. He can take you outside. It's nothing the kid can't do. But I don't know if those teams at the top of the board are looking for a guard like that. And because a lot of those teams, I feel as though they can kind of mold the guards they already have. And it's been talks. They've been talking with Burke. They like him a lot. He's came to a few workouts. I think he may fall.
So here's the thing is how do you qualify Burke's game as a guard? And how do you compare him to other guards in the draft? Does a guy like McCollum go ahead of Burke? Do you see guards maybe going ahead of Burke?
That's the thing. When you look at the NBA draft, is all about the needs for that team.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's what it comes
not
down
always,
to. Because
though.
If you look,
no,
if you look at that Darko pick, first of all,
okay, that was neat.
That was sure. That's a perfect example because I mean the Pistons looked at a guy like Carmelo Anthony, said they already had it in Tayshaun Prince, which is obviously the wrong choice. But they looked at the needs and what they needed on that team. They feel as though they needed a big man to kind of complement Rashid and maybe Ben. And they drafted Darko Milicic.
Yeah,
so,
but no, see, I see that point. But I also think that pure talent alone is another part of it. Sure, it is need-based. I get that.
True.
And definitely in terms
of
the Darko.
Yeah, if you have a phenom sometimes, like I said, I mean, a guy like LeBron, you're not passing up on a guy like LeBron James or, with the Pistons, passed up on the guys, tons of guys with Dwayne Wade. So
right.
It all depends, man.
No.
Crazy stuff happens in the NBA draft.
But here's the argument I'm going to make is that the Pistons have so many different pieces in place now. Yes, some of them may be traded. Yes, some of them may not be the ultimate answer for that team. But I think a team like the Pistons are going to load up on the best talent possible and develop a bunch of trade pieces because we've seen them try to put a lot of different needs together. That hasn't worked.
Yeah, no,
we've seen
it hasn't
year
worked.
By year by year.
Yeah, like I said, right now, I really like, I've said this, countless times last week, when you look at Greg Monroe and Andre Drummond, I think those two guys are golden. But the guards for the Pistons are way too inconsistent, and I feel as though they have no leader on that team.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts when it comes to leadership historically on the Pistons, you looked at that point guard. You know what I mean? And back in the day with the 04 Pistons, it was Chauncey Billups. You can go back to Isaiah Thomas and Joe D back in those glory days. So it starts with the guards, and they don't have that guard or guard tandem that really says, hey, this is our team. We're going to take over, and this is how it's going to be run. And I think Burke could be that guy.
Man, yeah, who do you like?
That's a good point. Well, in my Martin Truex dreams, it also said that the Pistons might draft Victor Oladipo.
I heard that too.
I think even my subconscious is reaching because he's not going to fall to eight.
There's
no way.
No.
I'm going to go with CJ McCollum, the point guard out of Lehigh, or I guess he's a combo guard, but they need three-point shooting. They have one guy who shot over 40% last year, and that was Calderon, and he's probably not going to be around. Brandon Knight shot, I believe, 36%, and then they have Kyle Singler, who's an adequate three-point shooter. But outside of that, they have no one.
No one, yeah.
And in today's NBA, if you're going to build inside out with guys like Drummond and Monroe, you need shooters to knock things down. So why not take a guy who is being mentioned as a poor man's Stephen Curry? I mean, nobody's going to be Steph Curry, but if you have a guy who can consist, I mean, he shot over 50% from three as a senior. Granted, it was a small sample size, but still, the guy he's a lights-out shooter.
Right.
I don't see McCollum being a bad pick.
I'm just sitting here having this conversation with guys and just listening to it. I mean, there are so many things the Pistons need right now.
Yeah,
it's a plethora of things.
There's a laundry list. I mean, it's
Laundry list. Yep. I mean, you can go on and on. I mean, if they draft anybody, they're bringing more than what they have right now on the team. You know what I mean? So that's crazy.
Now, I'm going to go with, actually, kind of a dark horse in this is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
Nice.
The reason I'm going to go with him is because, they do need a point guard. They need an offensive threat. But Knight and Stuckey, they drafted Stuckey based on his incredible mid-range. The fact that he would be an offensive threat. Did he develop into one? No.
Not at all.
Brandon Knight, very recent, a couple years now. Is he an offensive threat? He can be. So do they load up in two offensive threats like Matt is proposing and then package them? I think that's a viable option.
Yeah.
But I think that what Joe's going to try to do first is he's going to try to piece together a somewhat need-based team. And yes, Calderon, Stuckey. But I think he sees enough value in them to keep them. And I see we're running out of time.
You're not bringing it up.
I won't do it.
Jordan and LeBron.
Tomorrow.
We're gonna save that. We're going to put that in our pocket and just down memory lane one day and bring it back up. Because I don't think we're ever going to get that in anytime recently. But all right, interesting discussion. I'm a huge Pistons fan. Anybody who knows me. But the Pistons have to do something dramatic. I tell you that right now, guys, because it's so frustrating watching them every single year. It's horrible, man.
That's another conversation. How many years does Joe Dumars have left?
This is last year.
I think it's last year.
Unless we turn things around, he's out.
Right, he's done. All right, guys. Well, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky, production assistants, intern Mike Corey, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Worf, station manager here at WKR. Thanks to Tim Wendell. He was great for joining us today. Have a fantastic day. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3's Lansing. Be easy, people.